Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. The beginning of the talk that I did yesterday, I said that throughout that talk, our reference point would be faith. And I described faith as the belief that there is something greater than ourselves. Of course, faith originates in something that's deeper than belief, as we tend to think of it. A better term than belief is the way Rimaster translated some words in the Shishogi. And the term she used was true conviction. So, faith is the true conviction that there is that which is greater than ourselves. And you can step even a further step deeper or back and say that that true conviction itself grows out of an unshakable, indestructible intuition that all beings possess. And that is the intuition, the direct intuition of Buddha nature, our intuitive knowledge of Buddha nature. For many, many years, I've described it as a knowing without knowing, because the heart knows that which the head may be confused about. It is a fortunate person indeed who comes to the point in his or her life of realization that there simply is no external solution to the problem of suffering, that there is no external solution, no external way of resolving the spiritual koan. Such a fortunate person may, at points along the way, feel themselves to be anything other than fortunate. Because if you come to that realization, you are either going to go into total despair, or you're going to go with faith. When we read the early chapters of How to Grow a Lotus Blossom, we see a human being facing this point, at this point of choice. And no matter how far one has gone in the spiritual life, this is always a choice that is still open. whether one will go into despair or whether one will look up and go with faith. There has to be this freedom of choice, do you see? There has to be this freedom of choice. This is not an affliction, part of some existential angst built into the human condition, as people who are spending too much time running around in their heads blather on about. This is an expression of how much we are loved by the Eternal, by how much we are trusted, how much we are trusted. We have this freedom of choice. For someone who comes to this point and is fortunate enough to both come to this point and to know when they're at this point that there is a conscious choice that they can make, that they can choose to look up or to look down, I call such a person twice blessed, twice fortunate. And I think of such a person as triply blessed and triply fortunate if he or she chooses to walk in the upward-looking path. Because then the full glory of life beyond life and death opens up for that individual. Right within the suffering, the deepest suffering of their humanity. It is not a path of happiness, it is a path of magnificence and of true spiritual freedom. And above everything else, in my experience, it is a path of love beyond our wildest dreams. If you read or recite the Scripture of Great Wisdom, the Heart Sutra, you know, the word love is never mentioned. And yet, this is a description of love beyond our wildest dreams. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no form, no taste, sound, color, touch, or object, vision none, no consciousness, no knowledge, and no sign of ignorance. What is this about? No external solution. What does that mean? Hammered away at for line after line. What is its implication? What is it saying? There is only one answer to the problem of suffering. There is only one solution to the spiritual koan. Reverend Master described it magnificently and eloquently as recognized reunion with the Eternal. Since none of these external things work, since none of these is a solution, turn within and know the solution. Go through the lawful gateway to carefree peace. The gateway of pure meditation, of pure surrender to that which is greater than oneself. And know as you do so that it cannot do harm, that it is a good beyond. All worldly good and evil. It is the very quintessence of goodness. so you can bring all of your worry, all of your care, all of your pain, all of your longing, all of your grief, all of your love, all of your disappointment, all of your hope, and place it in its hands. Offer it on the altar of the heart. Entrust this painful and precious burden of sorrow and joy into the hands of the Eternal. And there it will be washed and bathed in a love beyond our comprehension. This has not come about as a result of our formulation of any kind of strategy. It does not come about as a result of some kind of magic. It does not come about as a result of a long accumulation of merit. It does not come about as a result of being some specially virtuous or holy being. It does not come about as the gift of one person to another. Does not come about as a result of intellectual study. Does not come about as a result of knowing a tremendous amount about religion. Does not come about as a result of being a good Buddhist or a bad Buddhist or any kind of Buddhist at all. It comes about as a result of being an ordinary human being with an ordinary human load of grief and pain and confusion, looking up rather than down, sitting up straight in the presence of the Buddhas and ancestors, and with one's whole being crying for help, that which is the source of all goodness and all help. Meditation, when truly done, is the very perfection of contemplative prayer. And contemplative prayer, when truly done, is nothing other than pure zazen. The doctrines, the strategies, good and evil, right and wrong, attainment and failure, virtue and vice, they all fall away. They're empty. And there is that which our heart can hold on to in life and in death. That which is our true and enduring and eternal refuge. When we doubt it, it is only because we have judged ourselves so harshly. As being unworthy of it. But it never makes such a judgment. There is not worthy and unworthy to it. Infinite love only knows how to love. Infinite wisdom only knows how to do that which is good for all beings. Whether we take refuge in it or not is not its problem, it's our problem. But whether we do so or not, it does not turn away from us for an instant, nor is it capable of doing so. Man stands in his own shadow or mess, or said so many times. Only he can turn and face the light. While we hang on to external things as if they are the solution, while we invest our belief in fantasies, in the transitory, in the unreal, we blind ourselves to what one day will be obvious when we can let go of the external and face it completely and fully. We long for love, and we chase human love in so many ways. We're a bit like a child on one of these things out in a playground. I don't remember what it's called, that it's a set of parallel bars with little crossbars between them, and you jump up and grab them with little bars and you swing from bar to bar. Human love's like that. One swings from bar to bar. Friendship, romance, family, it's all the same ultimately. One swings from bar to bar. One day one comes to the end. No more bars to grab onto. Then the choice is whether we'll let go and drop into the void. And again, I count as very fortunate a person who comes to that point and who then can let go and drop into the void, and as he does so, as she does so, look up. And in that very falling into the void, looking up, one finds that love that is eternal and infinite. That love that shines through all that human love, and that love that all that human love cannot take the place of. While we are trying to be God, while we are looking for other people to be God to us, we blind ourselves. It is us blinding ourselves. The blindness does not have to go on forever. We have a choice. Every time we sit down to meditate, we can choose to let go. We can choose to entrust ourselves into the hands of the eternal. We can choose to focus that longing and that pain on that which is its true refuge, and that in which it finds its true resolution and its true healing.